All right, here we go. A new week. A beautiful Monday in the city of Toronto. You just got to find it. It's out there. There's beauty out there. And the weather, not so much. But we got some stuff cooking this afternoon here on Overdrive. We got Jonas Siegel back in here from The Athletic.
Yeah.
Always great to have you back with us,
guys.
Jonas. And I'm looking forward to our Pinty's Playmaker of the Weekend. You got to hear that and see that around 5:58 p.m. Eastern time, because Noodles is going to shock the world with that.
I, you know what? I think I went off the board. I can safely say that, but I did shock the world. Let's hope that it has picks up a little steam.
I thought it was a good choice.
I figured you would, Jonas.
Fair enough. Actually, Hayes, before we get rolling, I do have to double down on one scenario. I got a text from our buddy Jonas here over the weekend.
Oh, yes.
Was that? With an empty tray of toffee.
Yep.
Empty tray. Like, so he has gone to town on, or your girl has gone to town. Somebody at your household has gone to town on them and really enjoyed them, unless you have a dog and you fed it to the dog.
It was a combination of both. You know when they really came in key was the Joe Thornton conference call was at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Yep.
And I was just kind of grinding after that and writing a story. And I, you know, you can't take time to eat. So I looked in the cupboard and I'm like, the toffee. And I just kept popping them and popping them. And by the time like I was done, it was the whole box was gone.
They're very addictive, I will say. I'm coming around. I might have to change my tune and my analysis.
Wow, you called them like the East Coast League of chocolate.
Well, they're okay. I said they're okay, just okay. Randy Carlyle and James
Reimer. I think he's right. I think that's about what they are.
Yeah.
Really?
I wouldn't choose them. Like, I wouldn't go to the store and, like, if all the other options, the Twix is there, the caramel, the Snickers, whatever, M&Ms. If, like, they were out of everything else and I just wanted some chocolate, I'd be like, all right. Yeah, I can do it.
And this is a tough year to tough time of year to introduce new chocolate, right? Because
right.
with Halloween coming around the corner, and there's
That's
still some
true.
Uncertainty on what's going to happen there. But we had to buy our 15 boxes because you always got to have a few hundred pieces more than is necessary.
Yes.
And I find I'm eating chocolate bars like mini bars at 9 in the morning,
yep.
having my second coffee, and I'm down 2 or 3 Kit Kats or Coffee Crisp. Like, it's certainly not healthy. There's no dietitian would ever tell you that's a smart play, but I can't fight it, man.
But you know why,
it's calling
though?
My name.
In your mind, that little bar is this big. Like, it's literally a one-inch bar. But
it's
you
still
have
like 100 cals, probably.
I know, but if you have 12 of them, it's the equivalent of a full chocolate bar or maybe two. But nobody tells you that. It's portion control. But if you don't control yourself and you have a dozen in a day, it's basically the equivalent of eating 2 chocolate bars.
Right. It feels that way. And I've been on a pretty steady diet of that, you know, morning in, morning out. And I think that'll be the case for the better part of three and a half weeks.
Yeah, that's fair.
And,
though.
You know, I'll be sick of it for a while. And then the holidays will come around about a month after that. I'll delve back in. And it's all good. We'll turn a new page over in the new year. That's when I'm really going to start fighting back and getting in shape. And you mentioned that Joe Thornton Zoom call. When did we start keeping Zoom call analytics and how many people are on the Zoom call?
I noticed that, yeah.
I saw that trending. The fact that there was 50-plus people on a Zoom call, like that was the actual story. Like, a lot of people tuned in
actually,
for Joe Thornton. Like,
it's weird, right. isn't it? Isn't it a little weird? Like, you can see
crazy.
Who's on the call and you can see who's asking a question. It's very bizarre.
Well, I hope Jeffrey Toobin wasn't on the Zoom call because
I think there's a
he's in a little bit of trouble.
He's got himself in some hot. Well, that's what I was just gonna say. Like, I hope that the camera wasn't on and some guy or gal thought that their camera wasn't on and went south.
The Zoom malfunctions have been throwing careers off the beaten path because it's just you think you're not being seen or you think you're on mute and things are being said or things are being done. I noticed that the analytics for Joe Thornton's Zoom call, the expected questions stat was very high for Joe Thornton. But he seems to be in good spirits, and we caught up with him earlier. We're going to catch up with him around 5 o'clock. We're going to play that interview for you at 5 o'clock. So Joe Thornton will be on the show today just after 5, and we're really looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to finally getting hockey going again. I mean, I've noticed it the past couple of weeks with the weather turning darker earlier, cooler outside. It just doesn't feel right that there aren't games. And we don't know when there are going to be games. But, you know, the Thornton aftermath, I said this on Friday, I was happy that they made that signing official around 5 o'clock. So we had about 2 hours, myself and Johnny and Ray and Pierre and others, to comment on it. And Jonas, you were writing about it. Everyone was writing about it and talking about it all weekend. And it's the name value, right? Like, it's Joe Thornton. It's a guy who's going into the Hall of Fame. And he's not the player he was, and he won't be the player he was. But it's just kind of cool, the idea that Joe Thornton's going to be wearing a Maple Leaf uniform at some point soon.
There was no negative. I wasn't on Friday, but you know, obviously when the signing was official, like I wanted to kind of, you know, get your reaction. Like, there was no negativity, was there? Like, I don't think any down. I don't see any downside to this.
Well, here's what I've been saying for the better part of a week. I think the concentration has been off a little bit in terms of people with that statement. Noodles, you're not alone. Everyone's like, there's no downside, no downside. Of course, right. There's no downside to $700,000. I mean, that is the league minimum. It's a one-year deal. He still can play. He's a Hall of Famer. He's on the Mount Rushmore of guys in the room.
Yeah.
So everything he brings, the intangibles, the tangibles, the size, the you got to believe passion to win, because that's the only thing missing from his resume, is off the charts. It checks every single box. My stance has been more about the focus on going at Thornton and using him in that role, as opposed to a lot of other options that I think are still on the market. You know, and that is what my opinion has been consistently, and I will stick to that. I'm not against Joe Thornton being here. I still think he's got game. But if in a month, you know, Eric Howla signs for $1.2 million, like, okay, maybe that's a better player right now, right? Like, that is a better player right now. That's a better signing. In a marketplace where I think you're going to get a lot of guys that are
like
being
cheap,
paid like 50 cents on the dollar based on who they are and what they can do. Exactly. And for them to say, we're just going at Joe and that's our guy and we got him and boom, our job is done. That's the only potential downside. It doesn't mean it will be, and it's a hypothetical, because now we'll never know who else they could have been pursuing and maybe who else they could have brought in. But that, I don't think that is outrageous to suggest either, that there are a lot of options, and they clearly focused on Thornton, and they got him, to their credit.
But, Hayes, would you be looking at, let's say they signed Eric Halla, would you be so much more confident about him than Thornton? Like, I just...
Yeah, I would be.
Really?
Yeah. In terms of the way he plays.
Because
I think
fast?
He's better right now. He's much faster. I like him. I like him as a player. He's in his prime, right? Like,
so that's, he would be your third-line center? Is that the idea?
Absolutely.
Well, where's Kerfoot then?
Well, Kerfoot's moving anyway because Thornton's here,
right?
So someone's coming here and moving Kerfoot.
But so what are you basing that? So are you looking at last year, Thornton, and saying, like, that guy? Because I'm not sure how much we should read into last year, given what was going on in San Jose. What do you think? Like, is that what you're basing it on?
Well, that's a part of it. He's 41 years old, Jonas. I mean,
but
not going to be better than he was, you know,
no.
2 years ago. Everyone's looking at 2 years ago. I think he can still perform. Like, that's, again, people are going to misconstrue this as you're anti-Thornton. I'm saying if there's a better option, then maybe go out and get that better option. But they chose Thornton, and I think a lot of it is based on the intangibles and what else he brings, which I totally support. I think they've done really well this offseason. I think the sum of the parts has been a really good game plan that Dubas and company have executed. I am not down on their offseason whatsoever, but it's the sum of the parts, and Thornton factors in on that. What I'm saying is if you isolate each guy, you might look at it and say, it's a bit of a gamble. You know, like, is Bogosian going to do what he did with Hedman every shift? I don't know. You know, is Joe Thornton still going to be able to give you 15 quality minutes? We'll find out. Can Wayne Simmonds prove that it was just injuries and not he's lost a step or two? Like, these are all legitimate questions. It's not being a hater. It's just a legitimate question.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I took it that they were signing a player coach. Like, they were signing an extension of a coaching staff to go into that room and not straighten things out. I don't know if it's an indictment. I just, to me, you had Mike Babcock a couple years ago saying, you know, they need to learn, blah, blah, blah. We heard it every day, learn. And then Sheldon Keefe a couple times used the word maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the team has to find the level of maturity, blah, blah, blah. Keefe was much more polished than Babs when it came to his criticism. But we heard the same message coming out of that room. I think you added Wayne Simmonds, you added Zach Bogosian, you retained Jason Spezza, and you add Joe Thornton to help dilute some of the leadership core. And what I mean by that, it's not taking anything away from those guys, but it's just spreading it out and having different voices in there. And I've said this before, and I wholeheartedly believe this. Joe Thornton doesn't have a filter, which is a good thing. I played with Brett Hull. Brett Hull didn't have a filter. Now, Brett Hull, you guys know what type of player he was. Amazing. Exactly what Joe Thornton was and is as a person. But sometimes you, as a room, there's things that need to either be said or kind of hinted towards, and I don't know if it has been. I think Joe
I fully support that, and I would lead the charge on all that. That's
right.
What I'm, you know, I'm not downplaying the significance of who he is, I think what he's going to bring. The contract
right.
is a no-brainer. It's $700,000. I mean, you literally cannot get cheaper than that, and he can still play. But I think a lot of people, myself included, hope he shows up and still has game, and it's like, wow, there he is, third-line center. But I don't think it's unreasonable for anyone to suggest a guy who's 41, just like Chara at 42, you know, the jury's out to see. We have to see him play. You know, we have
right,
to see
right.
it fit.
But I guess part of the question, though, with his age is usually it's foot speed, right? Like, that's the thing that usually goes. Maybe it's the hands. But he's never been fast, right? Like, so I wonder, I don't know. I wonder how long he can play and be effective just because that's never been what he's about. It's his mind. It's his passing. It's his control of the puck and slowing things down.
Right.
But I think Hayes is, like, to a bigger point, the risk of what they've done is that those guys don't have enough, and that as much as you've tried to boost like your dressing room and your leadership and intangibles and toughness and all these things, if they can't play,
right,
then you get in a little bit of trouble. But the difference in past Leaf teams that have tried these sorts of things is they have so much superstar talent that even if like Thornton is diminished a bit, it might not matter as much.
Yeah, and you can move him around a little bit if you have to, right?
Well,
like maybe he's on the fourth line. And he
can
still give you fourth line minutes. Of course he can. It's an upgrade
right.
over Frederick Gauthier every day of the week across
right.
the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's just no disputing that. But it's right. if you're hoping for third line, that's
yep.
15, 16 minutes against a little bit better competition. That may be a bit of a different story. But he's still got the passion, which is important, right? He wants to play desperately. That goes a long way.
I agree. That's where I was. Do you guys envision him on the third? I don't envision him on the third line. And I envision Kerfoot on the third line. Like, I think Spezza and Thornton are sprinkled in that fourth line, maybe some third line some nights or whatever. But that's up to the coach. And I'm not convinced that both of them play center. I think you know, the easiest, and I'm going to say this with respect, and O would probably crawl through the computer, but the easiest job to play is wing. In hockey, you can hide as a right or left winger because mm-hmm. your responsibility in the defensive zone is the defenseman. And if your defenseman is just pinching down the strong side, all you have to do is chip the puck by them or absorb some contact. Like that's why you see a lot of young players get pushed to the wing earlier in their careers because they can't handle the centerman responsibilities. So I think with both of these players advancing in age, if it's not looking right for them, push them to the wing. And mm-hmm. that way they don't get exposed at critical times, and you can still find them minutes. Like, I think Thornton and or Spezza can find second power play minutes, and I think they can find a regular five-on-five shift. You don't think second power play minutes?
I think I'd put Thornton on the first power play. Like, that's going to be one of the interesting questions about what they do. I would love to see him feeding Matthews for one-timers, like that passing ability, put him on the left side. And I don't totally agree. Like, I think he can still give you third-line minutes. Like, you look last year in San Jose, he was playing 15 and a half minutes a night, and some of, like, the possession and underlying stats that you guys love.
On a last-place team, though.
Yeah, but they were still pretty good, and if you take away his line mates, they were even better. Like, he was playing with Marcus Sorensen and Kevin LeBanc. Like,
Who do you think he's playing with this year?
Well, that's
Jimmy Vesey and Pierre Engvall or something. I mean,
yeah, fair. Like,
you know, he's not playing with Marner and Nylander, I don't think. You know, he might get some opportunities. But I'm with you there, Jonas. I mean, listen, Kyle Dubas, as much as he's going to, I think, commit to, okay, we got to add a little bit here, add a little bit there, maybe some size, some veteran stuff, he's still going to be committed to, can this guy play? And I think they truly believe that he can't play. But I'm with Noodles in terms of it not being a lock where he plays. And I think there's a chance he moves around. And, you know, for obvious reasons, because we've been distracted, we continue to talk about these new additions. But it's always going to come down to the main players, who are Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, et cetera. And even more so, and I thought about this a lot over the weekend, is it's still going to come down to Freddie Anderson.
Like,
if he's your starting goalie and you play Game 7 in Boston, he's got to make a stop. You know, I don't care if Joe Thornton's buzzing around and playing great. If Freddie's playing like he has historically in the playoffs, you're not going anywhere. So the one position they did not change or did not address is goaltender. Right. So it's still going to come down to Freddie Anderson.
Apparently Joe loved him.
Loves him.
Apparently loves him. Joe loves him. Like, that's the that was the weirdest thing I took away from all of that. It's like, ah, Freddie Anderson. Now, do you take it as a slight on Martin Jones and his quality of play recently?
Could be.
Probably, you know, potentially. But I also feel like that was like, you know, maybe even Kyle like saying to Joe, do me a favor and like let's calm the fires around our goaltender, you know, something like that.
Or do you think Noodles, like, he probably remembers Frederick Anderson from Anaheim and he's like, man, that guy's good, that guy's big. But I think Hayes is right. Like, I think if you look at everything that they've done, you could argue that's the one mistake, and you can pick it apart and you can say, well, what do you want them to do? But you're gambling on Frederick Anderson finding a level in the playoffs that he hasn't found. Like, you look at the numbers last year, they're good. But, like, at those really crucial moments, you didn't feel like he was going to make a save. And, like, you go into the playoffs next year, and let's say you play whoever. Like, who knows what the playoffs will look like. Right. Are you going to feel that much more confident that he's going to make that save? I don't know that you can be any more confident than you were yesterday.
Until you see it, right? Like, they could balance out a top 12, top 6, and you're like, man, this is the best team that we've seen in a long time with the Leafs, you know, like really balanced, and they've got some bite, and obviously they're going to score, and it's still going to come down to, can your goaltender get you 16 wins, which means he's going to have to steal you some, because 100 years of data will tell you, going to have to steal some games, going to have to hold on for dear life, going to have to win some in overtime. Like, that's just the way it goes in the sport, and that's the nature of the position. So, I think it's been an interesting couple of weeks. Kyle Dubas mentioned over the weekend that it's pretty much over. You know, like, this is the team. They might still tinker. They're always open for business. Maybe a door opens that they weren't expecting. But I think this is mostly it. And I said this on Friday, and I want to reiterate. I think the young guys on this team, you know, and specifically the big three up front, they owe a debt of gratitude to Kyle Dubas, because he is not a vindictive guy. You know, old school GMs probably would have snapped and said, one of you is leaving. Like, all three of you held me over a barrel for the negotiation. I paid all three of you, and you still haven't won anything, and something's got to give. Right. And I credit Kyle Dubas for having that disposition. I credit him for not being vindictive. He continues to prove to those guys, whether it's on paper with the contract, whether it's public support, or here with the moves that he continues to make, he believes in them, he supports them, and he's going to go to the wall for these guys. And I think he's done it here again. You know, like, okay, you guys need some help in the room or on the bench? Here's Joe Thornton. You know, the epitome of a good time, you know, good guy Joe Thornton is on your team.
Right.
Here's Wayne Simmonds, who's tough and will fight for you and be great with the media for you. And here's Zach Bogosian. He'll fight for you. Like, Dubas continues to show these guys love and support, and I think a lot of GMs would do that, but I also think a lot of GMs would have snapped by now.
Maybe
it's
that's
said one of you's gone. Like, I can't look at you anymore because I paid you what I paid you, and look what's happening with this team.
Well, maybe that's where having an analytical kind of GM helps, because if you're Kyle Dubas and you look at it and you say, well, am I making the team better by trading one of those guys? Probably not. So I can do it and feel good and you know, exercise like some of my anger, but like, I'm actually helping the team.
Right.
Right. Like, that's the difficult thing with doing something like that. But Hayes is right.
I think Kyle deserves more credit because he's actually more like other GMs in the league and trying to shape his team, not based on the numbers, based on chemistry, based on intangibles. Whereas 2 years ago, if these signings would have come through, I know Myrtle mm-hmm. would have had a stroke, and you would have been right beside him, Jonas, going, these numbers are no good, and blah, blah, blah. And then you're starting to realize that, you know what, maybe chemistry and that type of stuff does mean something in today's game.
I felt that all season, like watching what was going on, though.
Right. That's fair. I'm not saying, but I'm saying that the thought process, and I think Julian Brisebois deserves a lot of credit for that too, because it's not just shaping a team on how the numbers look. That's one piece out of many pieces of a pie when you're looking at putting together a winning formula. And all I'm saying is that recency history mm-hmm. right now, you're looking at Tampa Bay with some of those guys that may not have been analytical darlings, but they fit perfectly for that team and what they were trying to do.
Yeah, there was an ingredient lacking, right? And they've I think addressed it, and we'll find out when we hit the ice. Yeah. So Joe Thornton coming up at 5:00. We'll chat with Joe Thornton. He's still over in Switzerland. He played over the weekend for HC Davos. So we'll catch up with him in about 40 minutes. Keyshawn Johnson coming up. We got two football games tonight. Again, the Bills against the Chiefs. The Bills are at home and they're pretty big dogs. And then the Dallas Cowboys with Andy Dalton taking on Arizona. And we know who's starting the World Series tomorrow night for the L.A. Dodgers. We'll tell you about that and how nervous I got to believe Dodger fans probably are. We'll tell you about that a little bit later in the hour. Jonas Siegel in here from The Athletic. I'm Brian Hayes with Jamie Noodles McLennan. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Joe Thornton coming up at 5 o'clock. We've moved Ray back. Ray will join us in the 6 p.m. hour today. Steve Phillips coming up as well. The World Series first pitch tomorrow night. And both series were great. You know, Houston, they made that comeback. They almost made it happen. And it was a great game over the weekend, but the Rays held on. And Rays were the best team in the American League all year. And the Dodgers, you know, find a way to storm back and just crush the souls of the Atlanta Braves, who just cannot get over the top. And at the same time, the Dodgers were the best team in the NL. And these are the two best teams, the two top teams. I think in a shortened year, a condensed asterisk type season, that's what you want if you're baseball. You want the two best teams to be standing so no one can sit there and say, wait a minute, like what's that team doing? They were, you know, a 500 club and they caught a heater. But Clayton Kershaw will take the mound for game one tomorrow.
And that's going to be awesome. Like that was that game last night was fantastic. Like
that's as good of a baseball game as you're ever going to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As good as you're ever going
to
see.
Does it make you sad that, you know, it wasn't jammed to the rafters of people yelling and screaming?
But
and
some fans were in there, right?
Like
It's like Bellinger hit that home run, and I think he hit the fans, or at least the camera showed the fans going crazy. There was no social distancing in there. You know, like there were no masks, maybe a few scattered. But they're better than nothing, right? Like at least there's some fans, and there will be some fans for the World Series.
Where do you think his celebration ranked in, like, the Joey Bats department?
Up there.
It was pretty good, I thought.
Funny how he doesn't take much heat, right? Like, we don't get into this a lot on this show, but, like, Bautista took heat, Acuna Jr. takes heat, Tatis Jr. takes heat. I wonder what they have in common that Cody Bellinger doesn't. You know, they're Latin American players that play with flair, and Goose Gossage types hate that. But Cody Bellinger goes off, and he pimped that home run last night. And I love it. I support it. I'm all for it. But I didn't see much outrage the way we saw with Joey Bats about 5 years ago and other players in baseball.
Well, Joey Bats was an unlikable person, though, was he not?
Yes.
Or an unlikable character. That's
outside
why.
Of Toronto, he was.
Oh, I think here, too.
Yeah, no? He seemed like I don't know. I never – he seemed like I never dealt with him, so I – but he just seemed like an unlikable character. Maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, but
He had a chip on his shoulder. I mean, I'll give you that. And there were the Jays fans loved him because he came out of nowhere. He hit 54 bombs. You know, he was an all-time great Blue
great
Jay.
Player.
And there's been some great hits in the history of this team, but Bautista's bat flip in Game 5 is top five all-time, I would say. Not the top, probably not in the top two or three. It might be for some people.
Right.
But, Bellinger's got swag. I'll give him that. And he can play. And he almost blew his shoulder out last night after the home run celebration. which
it was awesome. I liked the little strut, and yeah, that was great theater for sure.
Yeah, it was a great game. And the Dodgers deserved to be in the World Series, but Kershaw's going game one tomorrow. 4.31 ERA lifetime in the postseason. Not good. So maybe potentially a redemption moment for him tomorrow night. You know this guy from a long career in the NFL? He's been with ESPN for a long time, Keyshawn J. and Zubin. You can hear it every morning on ESPN Radio. He's back on Overdrive. Here is Keyshawn Johnson. How you doing, Keyshawn?
Hey, what's up, fella?
Have you ever injured yourself celebrating a touchdown like throughout your career? Do you ever do anything where you're like, that was stupid? Like, I should not have done that.
I'm pretty athletic, so. Some of these other dudes aren't as athletic, even though they're professional athletes.
But you had good celebrations, I remember, back in the day.
Not really. I didn't really celebrate as a professional. I didn't celebrate as a collegiate. In high school and in junior college, I had some memorable celebrations in doing that time. But in the pros, I really wasn't a big celebrating guy.
Okay. Well, so what stopped you there? Why would you go crazy in junior high and in high school and then stop when you get to the pros?
I don't know. I just – maybe growing up or something. I don't know. Maybe I grew up.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing to hear. We prefer immaturity on this show with Keyshawn
Johnson. Well, I think you probably looped me in with all the rest of the wide receivers that y'all talk negative about every
single day. Yeah, we haven't got into Odell Beckham. Now people are focused on him again because the Browns lost and Odell was snapping on the sidelines again.
Ridiculous. But Tom Brady was snapping 2 weeks ago, but nobody said anything. He's got passion. Oh, he's passionate. Oh, that's the fire in a leader. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, why is that a separate? Why do the wide receivers get tabbed with being divas and everyone else has passion? Well, the quarterbacks do.
I wouldn't. See, you're talking to me. And talking to me, I don't pay that no damn attention. Whenever somebody starts talking about the quarterbacks or leaders and they got passion, I say, man, they're the most selfish, you know what's a lie. They're some of the most selfish guys going, but because they got y'all food, y'all believe that, and I say y'all because I always take myself out of the media. Y'all, they got y'all food and want you guys to believe that they're so passionate and all they do is they just work hard and that's all they care about is winning. I mean, y'all don't stop. Is that why they highest paid? Is that why they always arguing about their money?
Well, it's interesting what's going on around the league with, like, I've noticed in Philly, there seems to be a push to convince everyone that Carson Wentz is not an issue at all. It's all the wide receivers. Carson's making his throws.
That's what they've been doing for years, man.
Yeah. So do you buy into that theory, or do you think it's Wentz has to take some heat? I mean, the team's terrible right now.
Well, Carson Wentz is the biggest blame for that team being in a disaster, and so is the head football coach. Because when you allow your quarterback to continue to throw the ball and throw the ball to the other team, that's as much on you as it is anybody.
With Keyshawn Johnson. So what about the Packers-Bucks game yesterday? You mentioned Brady a moment ago, and I got to chew on this. I thought the Packers were going to roll. Coming off a bye, healthy, I thought they were going to go in there and roll. And as a Packer fan myself that was in the building in San Francisco for the NFC Championship game, I was getting deja vu yesterday because the Niners smacked them around twice last year, and Rodgers wanted nothing to do with it, and that O-line just got shredded. And that's what it looked like to me yesterday. It looked like the Bucs went at him. Todd Bowles said, let's go catch this guy, and he's going to basically shut it down. And that's kind of what happened with Rodgers and company. Do you think the book is out on them, or do you think it's a one-off for Green Bay?
I think it's pretty much a one-off. Green Bay's not going to win every single game this year. They're going to lose one or two more, so Tampa Bay. The NFL, you know, I kept telling everybody, they kept screaming at me and saying, I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm talking about. The Kansas City's going undefeated. I'm like, dude, nobody goes undefeated in this league. And if they do, that's once in how many years? It just doesn't – it's not something that happens. You're going to lose, and there's going to be teams – that gets you, that's unexpected. When you start playing well, they're going to be a team that creep up to you and pop you. And then if you're not playing well and you're the other team, you're going to be a team that gives a fight and pops somebody. It just, that's the way the NFL is built. It's built that way, where God, teams that are you expect to be bad are going to be better than what you expect, and the ones that you expect to be really good aren't going to be as good as you expect. I expected for the Rams to beat up on San Francisco last night. Well, it was the other way around. Mm-hmm. Right? All of a sudden, it was like, uh-oh, how did that just happen?
Well, so Keyshawn, is there a team now that you believe in that you didn't maybe before? I was thinking maybe Tennessee. I don't know, maybe Tampa. Is there somebody like that now you're starting to believe in?
More so Tennessee, because I see what they're doing. I see what how they want to play. They want to play bully ball. They want you to turn down the opportunity to hit Derrick Henry. And that's what they built that team around. That's why Tannehill is as successful as he is, because that team is about running the football, playing defense, and allowing the quarterback to manage the team. And if he needs to make one or two big throws in a game, they'll let him do that. And that's the recipe for success. And I think a lot of people get away from that recipe and start thinking about throwing the ball all over the lot because they think they saw Kansas City doing that to win a Super Bowl. But the eyes tell me something different. The eyes told me that Kansas City started to play better defense and they ran the ball extremely well. And when they needed a big throw from Patrick Mahomes, they got that big throw, which made everybody say, wow, ooh, they're really lighting it up. Well, he didn't throw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl. He didn't throw for five touchdowns in the Super Bowl. He did what he needed to do to win. And that's what Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Chicago, Tampa Bay, that's their formula. That's that success that they're riding on now. Run the ball, play great defense, and allow our quarterback, if he needs to make a couple big throws, make those big throws.
With Keyshawn Johnson, the AFC, they might have the best three or four, maybe five teams in the NFL. I guess, you know, Seattle would put their hand up, maybe Green Bay still, maybe Tampa by the end of the year. But Pittsburgh, man, they have it going on. That front seven is – they are savages, and Baltimore's a great team. Tennessee's a good team. I don't trust Phillip Rivers, but I love everyone else on that team in Indy. And Kansas City's going to be heard. I mean, do you have a favorite in the AFC, or is it a crapshoot, and should we expect this the rest of the year?
I think it's going to be the Kansas City, the Pittsburghs, the Baltimores, New England when they get their act together, and maybe Tennessee, maybe Buffalo gets in it, but they're not going to be a threat in it. They're just going to get in it. I think that's what you're going to see out of the AFC.
What kind of response does Buffalo have to have tonight? You know, it was ugly against Tennessee last week, and now they got Mahomes and Kansas City rolling through Buffalo. What do you expect out of the Bucs?
They got to shock Kansas City. Because if they go down to Kansas City, then, you know, you're going to look at it and go, okay, what is this? What really is this? It's two really good teams that they played and lost to. What is this team from Buffalo? Are they really for real, or are we looking at something different? That's what you're going to say. So they got to go in there and take care of business.
Yeah. Well, they're at home. I mean, Kansas City's a pretty big favorite, 5.5 points on the road at a 4-1 Buffalo team, but no crowd. So I guess the home field doesn't matter.
I was going to ask you that. Is anybody in the crowd?
No.
Are they going to have anybody?
No, they won't. No tables being broken, no lunacy, nothing. So I guess it's a neutral
site. Well, the sports bars are making some money.
They better be. Someone's got to be at this point.
Yeah.
Keyshawn, Jay, and Zubin, Monday through Friday, starting at 6 a.m. on ESPN Radio. He is Keyshawn Johnson. Always great of you to take time. Thank you for doing this.
Parlez vous français.
There he is. We.
We. All right, thank you.
Keyshawn Johnson.
He's awesome.
Every time we have him on, he throws out some French at the end.
Yeah.
As if it's TSM Radio Montreal.
And, I do think he's right, though. I do think the quarterback thing is real.
What's that?
Just that they get built up into something and it's interpreted one way, and I don't know.
Oh, so like Brady yelling is him being fired up and passionate,
yeah.
And Odell Beckham Jr. yelling is him being a bad teammate.
Yeah, he's pouting. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think he takes it personally, clearly, but
right. But don't you think that's an earned reputation, regardless of position? Like, if Brady was I'll give you an example. Baker Mayfield, in my books, acts like a hero all the time. Now, until he changes that, until he actually backs it up with a bunch of wins and all of that, to me, it's just lip service. Doesn't matter, you know, what position he plays. Now, Odell Beckham Jr., the most part, has backed it up in his career, has he not?
Yeah, his stats would say that. Not so much since he got to Cleveland, but before
recently,
that, New
yeah.
York, for sure.
Like, I think sometimes the reputation of a player precedes them, regardless of their position. You know, if you're a yeller and screamer, it's fine, but go and back it up. But then, you know, if you're having a tough go, you can't be yelling at people if you're not backing it up and you know, pulling your weight on the field or on the ice or wherever. This isn't
right.
Reserved
and there's
for
been
football.
More focus on that with Brady in the last couple of years. Like, more people have pointed that out. Like, interesting, right. You're yelling and screaming, Tom. Meanwhile, you didn't know it was fourth down last week. You know,
right.
Like, maybe you
That's
should
fair.
Bite your lip a little bit or bite your tongue. But I think the obvious reaction for most people is, if a wide receiver is yelling and screaming, it's because he didn't get the ball, right?
Right.
Like, he wants the ball. He believes he can beat his man. He believes he can take it to the house. The quarterback is in charge of the line, the tight ends, the wide receivers, the running backs. Like, he's got to take it all into account as the captain of every offense. So
right.
It's almost understandable that he takes everything into account. But, you know, I think Keyshawn is right that there are times where passion gets defined differently or construed differently, you know, diva as opposed to passionate, and it's all in the eye of the beholder. And I think what he also said about quarterbacks being selfish is probably true too, and that doesn't come up enough. Like, they do want all the money. They want everything to go through them. And that's because they've been pampered their whole lives. You know, it is the marquee position of American sport.
Right.
And there's nothing even close. Like, there's not a position in American sports that is even close to starting quarterback when it comes to popularity, when it comes to being a man, like,
well,
in high school, college, pros.
And credit. Like, who gets credit? Like,
and
who
credit.
Are we talking about? I guess we're talking about Derrick Henry in Tennessee, but now people are starting to throw around, is Ryan Tannehill an MVP candidate? It's
That's
like,
right.
Eh.
Yeah,
I know. It's like, hey, he throws the ball about 18 times. Yeah, he's been very good. Very
right.
good,
Perfect
Tannehill.
For what they need.
Exactly. He's a system quarterback. Vrabel's a great coach. Henry's an absolute beast. That defense is nasty for the most part. It wasn't so much yesterday. But, you know, the Packer game, there were two games that we focused on a lot on Friday. One was, can Cleveland finally prove that they're not Cleveland? They failed that miserably.
Yeah,
and
they got rinsed.
The other one was more not about the Packers, but will Tampa make a statement? And I got to give them full credit. They did.
Yeah,
I thought
they were in trouble when Rodgers was doing the little dance at 10 Cobb. Like, that's something that can come and bite you.
I'll bet you
like,
regrets
is that,
that
a meme?
Now.
That's a meme today, is it not? Where he's doing some form. I don't even know what the hell he was doing there. Because
it was like a salsa dance or something, and the memes that are out there, like how it started and now how
right.
it's going, those things were going quick for him. Like
yeah.
life came at him quickly, because how it started was, you're doing the salsa
yeah,
up 10, and then all of a sudden you're on the. He was on the ground all night.
Oh,
he was running for his life. He looked terrified.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what scares me a little bit, as a biased Packer fan, is that I saw that twice last year against San Francisco. They went at him, they hit him, they bullied the line, and Rodgers wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing. And I hope it's a one-off. Every team's going to have a one-off. Every team's going to have a bad game. But if that's the playbook, get after him and get nasty, and he's going to kind of wilt away, he better change that quickly. Because he's got to fight through it.
Don't you think
he didn't do it yesterday.
Oh, go ahead, Jonas. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, don't you think that's the vulnerability for all the older quarterbacks, that they kind of can't get around? If you're going to pressure them, it's lights out.
Generally, as you get older, the less you like being hit. Yes.
Right.
I mean, that applies to Brady. Like, the two Super Bowls he lost, the Giants just chased him all over the place and hit him. You know, the AFC Championship game he lost at Denver when Peyton was there, Von Miller was coming across that line, beating the hell out of him, and he couldn't, he looked jittery, right? Like, that's an obvious statement, and not every team has that type of pressure, but the best teams generally do, right? The best coaches can game plan for that.
Well, you want verification, Hayes, of how that was going. How much would you have paid? Because all I could think of watching that game last night is, I would pay for a live microphone on the field right now, because he was getting jawed at too.
Like, oh, yeah.
And he was jawing back. And I think it was kind of like, you know, knock it off. I'm an all-star here type of thing. But like the guys who were chasing him around were legitimately just jawing at him. Basically letting him know it's coming all night.
Well, Sue took a penalty, right? Sue took a 15-yard penalty. After an intentional grounding, but he popped him, and then he was chirping him. And then after that, he chased him around cleanly and was chirping him.
Right.
And It wasn't good for the Packers. It wasn't good for Rodgers. It wasn't a good look. It's a one-off. They're still 4-1. They're in a weak division. They'll be fine. But two games tonight again. The Bills, big dogs at home, man. They're 5.5-point underdogs at home, and they're looking for a response. I think they're going to bounce back. I could see them winning tonight. And then the nightcap is Dallas Cowboys against Arizona. So you got Kyler Murray on the big stage tonight under the bright lights, Cowboys Stadium. It's going to be a fun one tonight. World Series starting tomorrow, so we'll get to that a little bit later in the afternoon. Joe Thornton will join us in about 15 minutes. Why he joined the Leafs, what he can bring to the Leafs. Does he remember scoring a goal at the Gardens? I mean, that's how long he's been around. The last active player to score a goal at the Maple Leaf Gardens. So that and more coming up with Joe Thornton. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Joe Thornton coming up in 10 minutes. Joe Thornton will join us at 5 o'clock. We've got Ray Ferraro coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. Steve Phillips, 6:25 to tee up the World Series tomorrow night, which is wild. Like, the NHL's now been done for a couple of weeks. NBA's been done for over a week. And the World Series will be handed out by the end of the week, basically by the end of the weekend anyway.
Right.
So this time next week, we're likely saying goodbye to all three sports until, I don't know, March, maybe? You know, maybe the NHL plays in January or February, but no one really knows what's going on there.
And well, NBA, I mean, the NBA will be sniffing around probably in that same time frame.
About the same.
Although you keep reading article after article of how much those guys hated the bubble. Like, they're... I think if the NBA was like, yeah, we can come back, but we may have to create some form of bubble, I think those guys would say no.
No way. Not no happening. Way. Yeah, it's not. It's, there's no way it's going to happen. So the next time these leagues play, they're playing at home, like the NFL's doing, like baseball did.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of timeline, right? Like when you think it makes sense to get going, I think they're all going to try to delay as long as they can to try to get fans in the stands at some point. But – that's what separates hockey and basketball from baseball and football, is that it's an indoor sport, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have airflow, and you can't get the benefit of, well, everyone's kind of in the open air, and maybe if you separate and wear a mask, that's not going to be the case indoors.
Well, and it's going to be it'll suck for the Leafs, too, the longer that this goes, because not that, you know, Joe Thornton's playing, but at his age, and the same thing with Spezza and – you know, like, the longer this break goes, the harder it is to fire up the engine.
But
you know?
It will be a shorter season, so there's side benefit to that. But this is a good segue. I wanted to ask you guys about this. So I was waiting for the World Series game, Game 7 last night to start, and Ferris Bueller was on. And I started thinking, we're going to have a lot of time to watch movies because there's not going to be that many sports. Where does, like, that movie rank in, like, your rewatchable department? Because, like, I could flip that movie on at any point and watch it. And I know, Noodles, you're a big movie guy.
Yeah.
What's in, like, your pantheon of rewatchable movies?
Well, it's second tier for me. It's Goodwill Hunting.
Number one.
Yeah, like Shawshank. Movies like that. What's the one with Kaiser Sose?
Usual Suspects.
You know, like, movies like that, when they're on, you'll always find time to watch them. But Ferris Bueller, for me, the only reason, Jonas, it's second tier is because the world has aged so much in them. Like, you know, he's driving around. Like, Right, that's what I mean. Like, it's so far back in time. Like, I watched Uncle Buck the other day, almost start to finish, and I was like, that's a classic, even though people may not love it, but I was like, I'll take Uncle Buck.
A very quality movie. Yeah, I like Ferris Bueller. I don't love Ferris Bueller. Like, it's not a movie... I never see it again, I'm not going to think twice about it. But I like it. Like, and I was flipping around. I saw it, too. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's a good movie. The premise of it, it's a very good movie. But it's interesting you say that about older movies and timepieces. Because, like, Goodfellas is very rewatchable. And that came out in 89. It's set in the 60s and 70s. Right. And, like, you know, The Godfather is even older than that.
But
it holds up.
But it holds up because you're going back in time. Whereas Ferris Bueller, you're watching it, you're trying to watch it like it's today.
Right.
And that's not the case. Where Goodfellas, you know, like, it tells a story of, you know, drugs and jail and all of that, but it was back at that time specific. And that's where, you know, Shawshank for me is timeless because it's, you know, it's an older movie. And I always have time for Good Will Hunting.
Those are all good movies. Like, Good Will Hunting is a great movie. The thing is about Usual Suspects is once you've seen it, like, it's one of the all-time
great finishes. Yeah.
The ending is maybe the greatest ending I've ever seen in cinematic history for me.
Yeah.
And the next time you see it, you're like, all right, I kind of know where, like, Verbal Kent. Come on, Verbal.
Once you know who Kaiser Sose is, it's over.
Yeah, but you start to pick up, like, it's what I did. I just like picking up on signs along the way that you never knew. Like,
right.
Now
and then when you see it, you're like, this guy's such – Koshan's an idiot. How do you not know that Verbal Kent? Like, once you know it, you're
come on, dude.
Don't let him walk out that door, you idiot.
Koshan. And the same thing, Seven. I don't know if you remember the
Seven's amazing. Spectacular. But once you know
Kevin
what's
Spacey,
in the box,
though,
it's over.
Right?
I know, but. Yeah,
exactly. Same kind of thing. Once you see the ending there, you're like, that is wild.
Yeah,
all right, Joe Thornton coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.